Hey gang, thank you for listening to a very special episode of Promo Mode. We're welcoming back Tarquin Gotch. You might remember Tarquin was on here a few years ago. Tarquin has done a lot of things in his life. Look him up. But one of them, which prompted me to get him on the show originally, was that he was the music supervisor for a number of years with John Hughes. So a lot of the movies that are hugely influential, Some Kind of Wonderful, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, She's Having a Baby, all that kind of stuff. Tarquin is the guy who worked alongside John to get those songs in the soundtracks. Now, I think as most people know, that music was just as important as the movies themselves in influencing my generation. John Hughes is probably the most influential, one of the most influential artists of my generation. Isn't that wild? And Tarquin worked right there by his side. Now, when Tarquin was on originally, we got really deep into all of that. But what's going on now is they just today released a new box set. It's called Life Moves Pretty Fast, the John Hughes Mixtapes. And what's happening is that finally, there has, of all the great movies that John Hughes made, there were only proper, widely released soundtracks to a few of them. And this tries to correct that. So a lot of the songs that weren't available before, or you had to find them on individual singles or compilations or whatever, those things have all largely come together for this four-disc box set. And Tarquin supervised that. And so he's back on to discuss that and discuss his relationship with John, the songs that might be missing and why they're missing. I wanted to kick it off with, yeah, it probably would have been easier to just pick Don't You Forget About Me, since that's by far the most iconic song that is related to a John Hughes movie. But I want to go with this one. This is Kaja Goo Goo by Kaja Goo Goo. And this was played at the beginning of 16 Candles, you might remember. Anyway, so here's Tarquin talking about all of that. And I hope I have a lot of this music already because I've been a collector all these years, but not in one place. And not with all the goodies that are included in the box that Tarquin talks about. So I'm going to go out and get this box set. I hope you will too.
Why did it take so long for this to come out? Because this is like a pot of gold at the end of a long rainbow that many of us have been waiting for years, decades.
Well, it's actually taken since I started work with it, with the BBC. Demon Records is part of the BBC. And I started work with Adrian and Ben over there 3 years ago. And I said, the one rule is this has got to be official. It's got to be approved by John's estate. And that meant that everything we did had to go past them and get approved. And in the course of that, you know, we built up the trust with the estate to the point where James Hughes wrote something for the liner notes. John Hughes the third mastered the record. Right. And that is, for me, you know, having worked with John when John and James were young kids, it's a lovely thing. It's sort of going full circle. It's closing the circle. It's connecting the dots. I don't know what you want to call it.
Right.
But it meant a lot. And then the clearing of these tracks, you know, the problem is that it's not a lot of money to anybody. To any record label, you turn up and you go, oh, we're doing a John Hughes, and can we have that track? Can we have that track? It's not a huge income to them. You know, film sinks, oh, yes, you know, yes. And they throw people and money at it. We sink to the bottom, and I understand why. It just takes time. But in the end, you know, I wanted it to be the definitive collection, and I think it is. I'm very upset at a few omissions, the Stray Cats, 16 Candles, particularly galling since I signed the Stray Cats as an A&R man, and John, completely separate, because I didn't know him at the time, chose them to be, you know, for 16 Candles.
Yeah.
But the trouble was, when you commissioned songs from artists in those days, the film company took all the rights, but only for the film. They didn't take any other rights. So if you turn up and you say, well, can I have the compilation rights? They go, no, not ours. Mm. You go to the record company, Arista, in the case of the, they go, no, we don't have the rights to that track. The film company has it. And you go, yeah, but they don't have compilation rights. They say, well, it's not ours. And then the BBC go, we can't do it unless somebody will put their hand up and own the track. I said, well, the band wants us to have it. I've spoken to Slim Jim and he's up for it. No.
Really? So that's my question too, is how do things still get omitted? Especially, so it sounds like the Stray Cats wanted to be on this thing, but someone somewhere wasn't willing to sign a paper in time to get it done.
It's that nobody has the right. And I go, well, it doesn't matter then. It doesn't matter. Let's just do it. And the BBC are like, no, we're not going to do that. You know, we cannot be at risk unless so that happened on a couple of tracks. And then there was tracks where the artist just said no.
Everything really?
Sure. Everything but the girl, Apron Strings.
Yeah.
Ben Watt just said nope. And we go, oh, come on, please, Apron Strings. So good. Nope. Stephen Duffy, She Loves Me. We couldn't find, it was exactly like the Stray Cats. And we couldn't find anybody to put their hat, you know, just after we closed the running order, Stephen goes, I've got the rights.
So I wanted to ask you, I don't want to focus on the omissions, but one that stuck out to me too was Beat So Lonely by Charlie Sexton, because that song, that's a great song, and it wasn't on the original soundtrack, which is my favorite soundtrack of all time. And but the Duffy song was, Everything But the Girl was on the original She's Having a Baby soundtrack. So why does it not carry over? Why can it be on the original but not the reissue?
I wish I to be honest, I haven't got chapter and verse on Charlie Sexton. Big fan. And that's one of the reasons is that we started to get out of balance. As I took over the music supervising, I focused on the deals and they got better. And so it was easy for us to get a load of tracks for Ferris Bueller, She's Having a Baby, Some Kind of Wonderful, Planes, Trains, and Automobile. Mm-hmm. Where I had real problems was, you know, early on, particularly Breakfast Club. There were only two real pop tracks in Breakfast Club. Don't You Forget About Me, Spectacular, Simple Minds.
Right.
Immaculate. Wang Chung, who I signed.
That's the other one I was thinking of.
You know, anyway, we're very proud of it. Very proud of it. Indeed, six tracks, six vinyl albums.
Yes.
I haven't yet seen the CD. And we decided to do it in mixtape form for a number of reasons. One is that if you did it album by album, people, they've already got it.
Exactly.
And to be honest, the omissions become more obvious if you do it that way. But there was a real reason to do it, and that is that the way that we used to music supervise those films with John was he would send a script over, and he'd phone me up at all times of the day and night, and once you had John on the phone, you weren't getting off. You know, you were on for 2 hours, and it was brilliant. You know, you were hearing stories, you were being told about scripts, about actors, about direct. But it could be 3 a.m, it could be 9 a.m. I don't know which is worse. I think 9 a.m. is worse. And why he liked me was because I was in London, which meant that when LA and New York were asleep, he had someone to phone. Because he loved, cigarette, and he was happy. But so he would send a script, we'd talk about it. We'd start sending mixtapes to him when he was writing, and then they'd start shooting, and we'd get a rough cut of a scene, and then we'd send mixtapes again. And then we'd get edited VHS, FedEx was making a fortune.
Right.
But cassettes were the currency.
Yeah. Yeah. Who had, I'm looking over the track listing now of the four CDs. I still collect CDs instead of vinyl. So that's what I'm going to pick up. But like, who sequenced this thing? And can I apply for that job next time?
I'm going to, Ben Stanley, who supervised the project for the BBC / Demon Records, did it. And then we all took pot shots at him and moved things around. John Hughes, the third, objected to a couple of things being next to each other.
Wow.
If you don't like it, blame Ben.
No. That was probably the job I was born to do, is come up with the John Hughes mixtapes for a compilation like this. If I was qualified to do any job in the world, that would be it.
Did you see the films when they came out?
Oh yeah, pretty much all of them. The first one would have been Breakfast Club that I saw in the theater, and then everything after that I saw in the theater. Yeah. 16 Candles, I was too young. But of course I went back. And one thing that's interesting about this is that it includes not just the six teenage movies that we think of, but it goes into Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, like you said. It includes Holiday Road from the Vacation movies, because John wrote those as well.
What I want, you know, what I realized, you know, you don't realize it when you're young, how privileged you are to be in that where you are. And to have had that close view of a director at the top of his game, and making that transition from the big, let's call them broad family comedies, like European the Vacation movie and Mr. Mom.
Yep.
You know, families, middle class white, the family.
Yep.
Then the teen films, where he drew upon his own experience as a teenager in Chicago, and then drifting back to the family. The thing that's sort of interesting to me is that in both the teen and those broad family comedies, the family is pretty dysfunctional.
Yes,
it sure is. The Vacation family, you know, you don't want to, and then in the teen families, the family is dysfunctional. Usually the teenager is fixing the parents.
Exactly. Yeah.
He's doing that.
Yeah.
What's the exception? The exception, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, the family is idealized.
Yes.
You don't see much of her. We cut most of her out. There were quite a few scenes back in the house in Steve Chicago. Where his lovely wife was waiting. But you found you just didn't care about that. You wanted to be on the journey. So we cut most of that out. But it was idealized. And it was idealized because Steve Martin was trying to get there. And it's what John Candy wanted and didn't have.
Yes. Ooh, that's deep. I hadn't even thought of it that way, but you're right. Did you stay in touch with John after the teenage movies when he's doing Curly Sue and Dutch and Home Alone and that kind of stuff?
He brought me back. I was his music supervisor up to Christmas Vacation.
Okay.
Then I had one of the, you know, not unusual for John. You know, I was sent to Siberia is the way I like to call it. I was sort of excommunicated.
Yeah.
It was a papal bull, and I was not sent away from Rome.
Yeah.
And then I was brought back as executive producer, and executive produced, you know, Home Alone, Curly Sue, Only the Lonely, and Dutch. And, you know, Home Alone was the first, was the most successful, you know, comedy film of all time.
Yeah.
And I thought, this is fun. The producing's good. I like this. And then the next three bombed. So, that's a bit cruel. But Dutch bombed.
Yeah, yeah.
Only the Lonely break even, Curly Sue, kind of, but none of them particularly good. Mm-hmm. And worse, as somebody who'd wanted to be a producer all my life, I wanted to be a producer. You know, when you're growing up in miserable, cold, wet England, you think, oh, produce films, Hollywood, palm tree, sunshine, girls, actresses, flimsy outfits. Gosh,
Kelly LeBrock.
Kelly LeBrock. That's what you think. You think Kelly LeBrock. Right. But I got to produce four films. They all shot in Chicago in the middle of the winter. It was hell. Hell.
Oh, man. Did you stick with film production outside of John Hughes? I don't remember.
Yeah, I did. After John, I was working with John Candy, sadly, when he died. I don't want to take on airs, but I arrived back in Hollywood and he said, come to the office. And he gave me an office space and we'd talk about the films that he was thinking about doing. He was looking at A Confederacy of Dunces.
Oh, at the time.
And, he would have been.
Yes.
Jesus, born yes. for that.
No kidding.
But his fear was that as written, the lead character is a bit of a slob.
Ah.
And can you make a slob the lead in a film and make him lovable? And the answer is yes, you can, because he did it in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
And Uncle Buck. I was going to say, if anyone could pull that off, it's John Candy, because he'd done it, and we love him for it.
That's
we
right.
still love him for it.
That's right.
You know?
That's absolutely right.
Huh.
I agree.
Yeah.
So that was a huge shame, I think.
Yes.
But yeah.
Shoot. Okay.
And then I went on to do the movies of the week. I ran Fox's in-house movie of the week division for 3 or 4 years, knocking out 3 films a year, things like Alien Nation and did a remake of Vanishing Point. We did the O.J. Simpson story, highest rating TV movie of the week. And we did a Woody and Mia story.
I didn't know this side of your career. I'm always focused on the music part. Speaking of which, who did you personally have to reach out to, anyone like Lick the Tins or March Violets to make sure? Because those are bands that are beloved because they're on the soundtrack, but no one's heard from them in a really long time.
Yes, it's funny, isn't it, how some of them just sort of disappeared.
Yeah, Blue Room is another one.
Yes, and I found them.
Okay.
I'm going to talk to Linda Hall, the girl singer from Blue Room, on Sunday, because we're going to do a podcast about this. And I've been tracking these people down. So Linda, because she also sang on She's Having a Baby for Dave Wakeling.
With Dave, really?
So she can talk about two things. And Lick the Tins, it was great. The guy at the BBC, Ben, used a graphic designer that was Simon from Lick the Tins.
No way.
And then through him, we found Alison. You know, because, of course, when it comes to a podcast, I'm trying to get as many women, and you know, so I'm not just old white guys.
Yes,
you
know. Same.
Yeah.
That's huge, because when you and I talked 4 years ago or whatever it was, neither of us had seen or could find Lick the Tins for a while. I remember bonding over that. So if Lick the Tins or Blue Room or any of these people would like to come on my podcast to talk about it, please pass on the information. I would love that.
Yeah.
I would love it.
Lick, Blue, they'll be on.
Good.
They'll be on.
Good. I would love
that. Bluey Sum, I found him.
Yeah. I think I'm Facebook friends with him, but I don't know him very well.
Okay. Yeah. He's lovely. Yeah.
Yes. Did you have a hand in the packaging? Because I saw you do one of those unboxing videos.
Yeah, I did an unboxing. But mainly my job was to make sure John Hughes III and the family, the estate, liked it. And I like this a lot.
Yes.
I think the idea, mixtapes and the sort of cassettes, it's true to the history of the project, and it gets us away from being just a soundtrack album.
Okay.
Who did you used to make cassettes for? Come on, be
the girls, all of them. I'm famous for this. I was famous. That was my thing. That was my thing to make mixtapes for girls. And it would be some songs that they didn't know, but a lot that they did, and try to introduce them to people and stuff like that.
No, this is interesting. Our seduction techniques. Yeah, you had to give them some that you knew they liked.
Yes.
But just enough new ones for them to think, oh, he's interesting.
What is this? Boy, this guy, he's different. Yeah. And tapes were good because you had two first tracks and two last tracks. Yeah. And so, you know, so you could, and that matters. You want to kick it off just right, and you want to end it just right. You know what I mean? Yeah. Those are the days. I can't remember who else from this group did you manage? You managed Roger, Ranking Roger.
The Beat, and by the time I was doing this, it was General Public. And then while doing this, I managed XTC, Stephen Duffy. What a talent! So the Dream Academy, General Public,
that's
XTC,
right.
Stephen Duffy. I think that was Hugh Harris, who's on Uncle Buck, who sadly died. He was such a talent. And such a beautiful voice, and he got cancer of the throat.
Couldn't sing. Oh man, that's rough.
That is tough.
Yes. I remember what I was going to ask you earlier. My understanding is that Matthew Broderick contributed to the liner notes for this.
He did.
Correct?
Yes, he did. Okay. Ben from the label reached out, and Matthew very kindly contributed. It sort of gives us a vague legitimacy, not real, but God bless him.
Was the plan always to just have him? Was there going to be Judd Nelson or Molly Ringwald or anything like that?
We thought about that, but I didn't want it to get too far away from the music.
Okay.
And I thought if I go after too many actors, that happens. And Matthew he was so great. I mean,
good. I'm sure you've heard this from a million people in your life. I mean, John is responsible for creating millions of people's adolescence, for defining for us what it means to be a teenager at that time, taught us how to speak, how to dress, what to listen to, what to like, how to feel. And a humongous part of that is the music, obviously. Now, all this time, there's never been a proper 16 Candles soundtrack. There was like a 5-song EP out there somewhere. There was never a Ferris Bueller's Day Off thing until a few years ago. So by extension, you are the guy who had John Hughes's ear that changed the lives of an entire generation.
Well, you're very kind to include me in that. I'm gonna give it all to John. You know, the difference between what John did with music is he made the teenagers of America, the white middle class teenagers, let's be blunt, listen to different music. Mm-hmm. That's what he did. Yeah. The other big soundtracks were taking music they already listened to and giving it even more prominence.
That's it.
But John, and I think this stems back to his youth. When you're in high school, you have to wear your badge. And your badge is either you're a jock or you're a geek or you're the brainy ones or you're the pretty ones or you're the rich ones. You have to have your badge. And his badge was a bit like you with your mixtapes and the girls, was the music. Very specifically, import music from England. And that happened, I believe, because on one of the first albums that happened for him on was the Beatles, where there were different tracks on the Britain. And he noticed that the girls were impressed. Mm. And he did well with the girls. He did so well with the girls that, you know, he married the cheerleader. Doesn't get any better than that in high school, I am led to believe, because I didn't go to a high school. Right. But that is the Mount Olympus of teenage life, I believe.
It is. It really is. Yeah.
You know, so that import underdog English thing really he identified with in high school, and he bought it to the teenage movies, and he bought America with him. And
yeah.
You're right. It is extraordinary. And it was a very exciting phenomena to be part of.
Yeah.
And, you know, it helped the movies, both in the films, but in perception terms.
Yeah. It's not a stretch at all to say that I am who I am because of the John Hughes movies. It influenced me and informed me. I was the perfect age to see these kids who were just slightly older than me dealing with what was just around my corner and learning the clothes they wore while doing it, the music they listened to while doing it, the way they talked to each other and the teachers and their parents while doing it. That gave me like the guidebook, you know, the instruction manual.
Absolutely. And if you stuck with John, you started at 16, you then went to detention because you were being a bit naughty. Then, you know, you get to Ferris where they're just about to leave high school.
Yeah.
And then you jump to getting married and having a baby. What have we missed out? What have we missed out? What we've missed out is going to college.
Yes.
Didn't go there. Why? John went to college, didn't like it, dropped out.
Oh, that's true. I never thought about that before. He never wrote the definitive college movie.
No.
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 It was high school and family life, domesticity.
Yeah. He skipped college, as did I.
Yeah.
Did you go to college?
I did, yeah.
How was it?
It was fine. It was fine, you know.
If I'd realized that all you did was chase women, I would have
Colleges are great places to chase women, Tarquin.
Yeah, well, that's what I found out too late. You know, when I was touring with bands, I'd go, blimey, this is fantastic.
If I had been Tarquin Gotch in the 80s, there's no way I would have gone to college because I would have already had my dream job and my dream life. Yeah.
Well, you're very kind to say that. And I am very grateful for the breaks I've been given. I'm very grateful to Kelly LeBrock for but anyway, we should all be grateful for Kelly LeBrock, shouldn't we? Come on.
We all should, man. That Weird Science was an integral part of our teenage life. Okay.
Now that's I didn't put Weird Science in there because Weird Science is a science fiction movie and a teenage high school movie.
Mm.
So it's not in that line that I've been talking to you about.
Yes, I see what you mean.
To jump out. Some people are not fans of it. I think it's got some great moments. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's, with no disrespect intended, I don't think it's up there with 16 Candles and Breakfast Club. But I have to be a supporter, if only because Kelly is just so absolutely gorgeous in it.
She sure is. I consider it one of the six because they're teenagers when the there's a senior too.
I did think about putting that in and not having Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, but I wanted to talk about that.
I get you. Now we should say there are like. Weird Science is on the soundtrack as well as I think General Public's Tenderness, which plays in the background of A Scene or Two. That's in there as well. When you came on as the official music supervisor, I don't believe it was Pretty in Pink. Was it around some kind of wonderful?
Well, he was shooting Weird Science. He was in post on. I think he was on post on Pretty in Pink and. Prepping Ferris.
Okay. And you stuck around for Ferris, Some Kind of Wonderful, She's Having a Baby, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. Sounds like a few after some of the family ones after that.
Then Christmas Vacation. Then I took a gap, and he brought me back for Home Alone.
Okay. You kind of touched on this earlier. This is not an idea that I have ever subscribe to, but sort of whether his movies age well in a politically correct sense. I know Molly Ringwald has spoken out about that, and that's fine for her to do that. I think I don't necessarily want to crucify people from previous generations who were doing the best they knew how to do and didn't foresee what was coming later. And so I don't place any guilt on John for that.
It's interesting, isn't it? I mean, yes, there are some tricky issues. Molly objected to the scene in the Breakfast Club where the boy tries to look up her skirt. I think also the Anthony Michael Hall, the knickers in the bathroom and 16 candles.
16 candles, yeah.
There's Long Duck Dong in Pretty in Pink.
That's true.
And there's the drunk girl in 16 candles in the back. Voice.
Yeah.
Those are the things that from the benefit of 40 years of progress we look back on and go, oh, really? Yeah. But you know, I looked at Pretty in Pink and Long Duck Dong. You know, somebody objected to the fact that there's a gong announcing whenever he sort of appears. Is that racist? I'm not sure. Certainly was guilty of trying to look up girls' skirts when I was in high school. I admit it. I was keen. And it's a tricky subject. As you say, I don't know. Comedy pushes the envelope. Comedy has to go and find those borders. And sometimes they're unfortunate. And sometimes it helps move the dialogue along.
So, I agree. Yeah.
I mean, certainly George Watanabe has never complained about the break of being in Pretty in Pink. It gave him a career.
Yeah.
And nobody put a gun to his head and said, you have to do this or anything like that. So it's tricky.
Yeah, it is. I just think the good outweighs the bad in that so much that it you can't cancel it altogether. That would be the wrong move. There's just too much value in everything else. And as you mentioned, comedy is pushing the boundaries, pushing the envelope. That's what all of them do. If you're some of them, it, you know, 40 years in hindsight, like George Carlin looks like a prophet nowadays, but not everyone got away like that, you know, but they were just doing the best they could. It was funny at the time. We know better now. We wouldn't do it. It doesn't mean that you can't look at these things and think they're funny and still have value, you know?
In the Marx Brothers, who I think are genius, Groucho, they're always lusting after the girls. In fact, Harpo chases them around the room. Mm-hmm. Where's the border between that and the girl in the back of the Rolls Royce? Well, okay, yes, she was drunk and, you know, but you see, anyway, you get it.
I know. It's just dealing with topics. Anyway, well, Tarquin, I am so grateful that this box set exists.
Well, thank you so much. Many of us have been
waiting for it for decades. I'm so glad it exists. I have a lot of these songs because I'm a nerd huge fan when it comes to Hughes and your music choices, but I'm going to go buy this anyway because I have to have it. And thanks for chatting with me again. Like I've said before, there are a handful of people on Earth whose life I covet intensely, and you're one of those people. If I could relive my life, I would want to be Tarquin Gotch.
Well, you are. That's one of the nicest things I've heard in ages. Thank you very much. That's a huge compliment. So thank you. Thank you for having me on your podcast. And
of course. You
know, happy to come back. And
okay. Thank you, Tarquin. Good to see you again.
All the very best. Ciao for now.
All right, gang, there you have it. Again, this just came out today, so go order it if you want. I'm going to. Life moves pretty fast. The John Hughes mixtapes. And we're closing it out. This is you guys remember this one? This was Silicon Teens is the name of this band, group, whatever they are. And this one was on Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. So as I mentioned, it's covering all a wide range, not just those teenage John Hughes movies, but a lot of the other John Hughes movies. It's a shame that there are still some things hanging out there that we couldn't get to, but hopefully that'll be made, you know, hopefully that'll be corrected eventually. And hopefully Tarquin will come through and I can talk to a lot of those bands for the show because I'm curious what their story is. Anyway, thanks for listening in, folks, and go pick up the box set. We'll talk to you soon.